Speaking on this program is Brother Tony Lawrence.
And there are some of the lessons that we present that are related primarily toward our Christian living. We talk about the type of faith that one must have in order to be saved from one's sins. We often talk about various biblical themes. There are some lessons, however, that relate to the work of the church and the obligation of the church. This morning, we're going to talk about one of the great obligations that the church has. And I would like to ask, if you would, to consider with me carefully some of the things that we're going to study today, and to think about them not just from the perspective of, yes, that's true, but to think about them personally. How is it that I can make a difference in reaching the world for Christ? I want to begin with the world. We look at it and we see a number of countries, a number of places where men may go on the face of this earth. We think about where we live in the United States of America, the state of Tennessee, and the city of McMinnville. We sometimes do not realize the vast scope of the world. If you look, there are a little more than 6.8 billion people that occupy our planet right now. If you begin to calculate how many people that are being born and those who are dying, 3 more people are born every second than are dying. I've been up here less than 2 minutes. During that period of time, there have been enough more people born in this world than have died that can fill this auditorium. The scope of what you and I have to accomplish is tremendous. We have an obligation before us that may seem so formidable that we can't attack that problem. But the question is going to come up about those people. Will they be saved? When you think about the man, the women, the children, the old people, the young people, will they be saved or will they be lost? Will they die and burn in hell? And folks, that's some very serious consequences to be thinking about. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 and 14, "Enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and there are many who go in by it. Because narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way that leads to life, and few are those who find it." We've got to understand that we have a vast world to reach, and at best we can only reach a few and be able to persuade them. You look at a picture of people. This may be like someone looking down Main Street yesterday and looking at the people who were gathered on Main Street. Or it might be a group of people who are gathered either in Alabama or Kentucky or Tennessee yesterday for a football game. You see a sea of people. And you look at those people there and you ask the question, what will happen to them? And you ask the question, why are we not reaching them? Why is it that those men and women whose faces you see in front of you, why are we not reaching them? And more importantly, what can we do to change that? I want to impress upon your minds the seriousness of the problem we have and the enthusiasm, the zeal for us to try to make some changes. So what I would like to do this morning is to look at 7 reasons why we are failing to reach the world, and then to try to offer some biblical things that will help us to be able to improve. Number one, and I know this is not going to be popular, spirit. We have become a group of people who expect someone else to do even the most menial task for us. There's a room that most of us have in our houses that are no longer used. It's called a kitchen. You know why? We have someone to cook for us. We have people to do all sorts of little menial tasks for us because we don't want to do it anymore. We want someone else to do it. We want to pay them to do it for us. And you can look and see our laziness by the number of excuses that we produce. Listen to Solomon and his wisdom in Proverbs 13, verse 4. He said, "The soul of the lazy man desires and has nothing." Let me ask you a question. Do you want the 6.8 billion people in this world to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ and have an opportunity to obey it? Do you? I think practically everyone here would say, yes, everybody should have an opportunity to hear. Well, then what are we going to do about it? We want it, we desire it, but if you don't do anything, how is it going to change? As you go further to chapter 19 and verse 24, Solomon's going to use a humorous illustration. He says, "A lazy man buries his hand in the bowl and will not so much as bring it to his mouth again. He's so lazy, he's so tired, he wants to eat, he's hungry, but he will not put his hand to his mouth." As you go further in Proverbs chapter 26, verses 13 and 16, he says, "The lazy man says, 'There's a lion in the road, a fierce lion is in the streets.'" Oh, you have to understand, there's something out there that's dangerous. There's something out there that is larger than life. A lion is in the streets. I can't do anything. And then you drop down to verse 16, and Solomon goes on to say, "The lazy man is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can answer sensibly. For every reason that you can produce, he can come up with seven reasons why he can't do it." And the truth is, to be blunt, we are a spiritually lazy people. So I go a little bit further and I start looking at Warren County, McMinnville. This is evidenced by the fact we are robbing, or if you might want to say borrowing, sheep from sister congregations rather than seeking the lost souls in the world. I don't think there's anybody here who has been in Warren County very long that does not realize that what occurs in Warren County a lot is member rotation. One moves from one congregation to another congregation to another congregation, and attendance boards go up and they go down on the basis of people moving from congregation to congregation. But what are we doing to reach out to the lost of our community that are not Christians? To be lazy is to be lost. Matthew chapter 25. Verse 26 and 30. In the parable of the talents, Jesus said to him, "But his Lord answered and said to him, 'You wicked and lazy servant,'" dropping down to verse 30, "'and cast the unprofitable servant into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Take that one who's not doing anything and cast him out.'" Or as I go to Ezekiel chapter 3, verse 18, one that ought to really make us think. Ezekiel says, "When I say to the wicked," quoting from God, "'You shall surely die, and you give him no warning, nor speak to warn the wicked man from his wicked way, to save his life, that wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood I will require at your hand.'" Pilate symbolically went to a pail of water, a pan of water, and washed his hands and said, "I am innocent of the blood of this man." Did that remove it? No. He was just as responsible for the blood of Jesus as those people who drove the spikes into his hands and in his feet and put him on the cross. You and I can say, I'm washing my hands of the people of this world. Does that remove it? No, it does not. Number two, the second reason is because of pluralism and universalism. We in the United States have become accustomed to the fact that we are to be tolerant of and accepting of people of all different faiths and religions. We are taught that we are not to reject, to label, to stigmatize anyone by suggesting that what they believe is not right. We are feared of being perceived as being bigots, or as I used to hear it when I was a kid, a self-righteous hypocrite. To think that you're better than someone else or that you know more than someone else. And this is evidenced by the fact that we have a lot of what's called interdenominational alliances. People don't want to look and say that here is a Muslim who follows after Muhammad and say what he teaches is wrong, and if the person practices that, they'll lose their soul. We don't want to look at the Jewish people who reject Jesus and say he is not the Christ, he is not the Son of God, and to say unless they repent, they'll perish. And we don't want to look at denominationalism and say if a person doesn't leave that, they can't be saved. Folks, we are living in a society that wants to say everybody is okay. But you have to realize that Jesus was very exclusive in what he said. In John 14, verse 6, Jesus said to him, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes unto the Father except by me. That's the only way. You can't change that. I can't change that. You can't change that. Nor should we want to. But what about all of those people who say Jesus is Lord? Matthew 7, verse 21, Jesus said, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. And he goes on to say, in that day many will say to me, have we not cast out demons in your name, done many mighty works in your name? And Jesus will say, depart from me, I never knew you. There can be people who are religious, who are zealous, and at the same time, they are wrong. In Romans 10, beginning with verse 1, listen to the Apostle Paul. Listen to his attitude. Listen to his concern. And then notice the condition. Brethren, my heart's desire and prayer to God for Israel is that they may be saved. I want you to understand, Paul loved his kinsmen according to the flesh. He loved Israel. He wanted Israel to be saved. It wasn't he wasn't concerned. He said, for I bear them witness that they have a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge. For they, being ignorant of God's righteousness and seeking to establish their own righteousness, have not submitted themselves to the righteousness of God. These people are lost. They want it their own way because they do not know God's way. These folks out here in the world that are not obedient to the gospel of Christ are lost. And pluralism, universalism says everybody's okay. The Bible does not. Number three, one of the reasons why we're failing is because people are beginning to believe that there is no such place as hell. If there's no hell, then why worry about their soul? If a person dies and there's no eternal punishment, then why worry about them? In fact, some believe that the righteous will get to go to heaven. But they believe that somehow the evil, the wicked, will be annihilated. What they mean by that is that when Jesus comes again, He'll carry the righteous to heaven, but the wicked, He'll burn them up just like that. They'll cease to exist. Now let me point out to you, annihilation is only wishful thinking. Someone says, I could stand to be burned up and after that I don't exist anymore. I wouldn't be conscious of pain. Listen to Revelation 20, verse 10. The devil who deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone where the beast and the false prophet are, and they will be tormented day and night forever and ever. Day and night, forever and ever. Where's that at? That's the lake of fire and brimstone. What is the lake of fire and brimstone? That's hell. We have to understand there is a place called hell. I'd like for you to listen to the rich man. Let him speak to you. In Luke 16, verse 24, then he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me. Let Lazarus, that he dip his tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. He didn't cease to exist. He said, I'm tormented. If you go a little bit further to verses 27 and 28, then he said, I beg you therefore, Father, that you would send him to my father's house, for I have five brothers, that he may testify to them, lest they also come to this place of torment. So bad, he doesn't want anybody else to come there, especially his family. Reason number four. Many just have way too much to do. I'm going to tell you, I'm probably as guilty as anybody of planning way too much to do. I've been stressed out the last few days trying to think about all the things that I had to do for the next 4 or 5 days and wondering if I would get everything done. We have filled our lives with so much busyness. If you don't believe this is true, try to schedule an event. You try to find a time when everybody can get together for a fellowship meal. Try to plan a time when you can have like a fellowship event like our fall festival. Well, I'm sorry, I can't be there that weekend. Well, I'm sorry, I can't be. What you find out is there's no way that you can schedule any event that it does not conflict with somebody's schedule today. Just simply can't do it. We all have a lot of things to do. It's a real challenge just to get people to attend the services of worship. I'm not talking about opportunities for work. I'm talking about the services where we worship. We're gathered here to worship God today, to study His Word. This is not when we're going out into the community and trying to reach the lost people. I want you to listen carefully to Luke chapter 8, verse 14. Jesus said in the parable of the soils, now the ones that fell among the thorns are those who, when they heard, go out and are choked with the cares, riches, and pleasures of life and bring no fruit to maturity. What happens? Things come up in their lives. Cares, riches, pleasures this life. What happens to the fruit? There's no fruit that matures. Now let's go a little bit further. Let's listen to John the Baptist in Matthew 3 and verse 10. Because John was a man who knew how to win friends and influence people. He always put it in such soft words that people could just let it go down with warm milk. Now here's what he said. And even now the axe is laid to the root of the trees. Therefore, every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. No, John didn't soft soap it. He said the axe is now at the root of the tree and the axe is drawn back and it's ready to cut down every tree that will not bear fruit. Are you able to tie point A to point B to point C? Would the words of Jesus cut you? I want you to listen. Jesus is in the Garden of Gethsemane. He's carried with Him Peter, James, and John. He has left them here in a location and gone just a little bit further to pray. He's asked of them if they will watch while He goes yonder and pray. And here's what Jesus says to Peter. Then He came to the disciples and found them asleep and said to Peter, "What? Could you not watch with me 1 hour?" Let me ask you a question. Are you so busy? You've got so many things in your life that you cannot take 1 hour for the Lord? I've got to tell you, I would be embarrassed if I was Peter, and I'm sure he was, for the Lord to look at him and say, "Couldn't you just watch 1 hour?" Number five is a fear of rejection. Will people reject us when we try to invite them and we try to teach them and we try to encourage them? Sure they will. However, I want to show you what some statistics say. And I read these and I thought, these reflect exactly the same response that I have had in trying to talk with people. Number one, 36% of the people will have a neutral reaction. You go and you knock on somebody's door and you say, "We're having a countywide campaign that's going to be held at the Civic Center. We'd like to invite you to come and to attend with us." The majority of the people are going to take the little flyer that you hand them, say, "Thank you." Close the door. They're not going to be positive. They're not going to be negative. They're not going to be either way. They'll just simply take it. There'll be a neutral reaction. 38% of the people will be positive in some way. That is, they may say, "That's interesting. Thank you." And only 5% will be antagonistic toward us. You knock 20 doors, only one out of those 20 doors is going to have somebody who's going to be negative in their response to you. I know we all tend to think, because of the one or two bad experiences you may have had, that it's going to be that bad, but it's not. This fear of rejection is really not a rejection of us, but it's a rejection of Christ. Jesus said in Luke 10:16, "He who hears you, hears me. He who rejects you, rejects me. He who rejects me, rejects him who sent me." It's really not rejecting you, it's rejecting God. Now, how should I respond when I receive rejection? Should I get mad? Should I get angry? Should I get frustrated? Here's what Jesus said. "And whoever will not receive you nor your words when you depart from that house or city, shake the dust off your feet." You go to someone's house and they say, "I'm not interested." Okay, thank you. And you go to the next house. At least you've delivered your soul. You've done what God asked you to do. In Psalms 27:1, "The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid?" Our greatest fears are often never realized. They never happen. We expect people to be angry. We expect people to be antagonistic, and they're not. Number six, a lack of effort to learn how to reach people. Because of the previous reasons that we've discussed, many people never even make an effort. They never even try. They don't try to learn. And they're unaware of how easy some of the tools really are. You know, I used to try to occasionally cut a mitered corner. And I'd try to cut it with using a marker and a some sort of 45-degree angle. And I'd make a mess out of cutting it. Then I found a little thing called a miter box. Oh, that was so much easier. It would hold it where you want it. Now they've got this tool that's called a chop saw. Oh, and it just makes it all just a piece of cake. You see, there's a lot of tools that make it a lot easier. Let me tell you just a couple tools here. Number one, tracks. As you're exiting the auditorium this morning, as you go out past the water fountains, I want you to look to the right. There's a track rack there. The Ricky Prince keeps that track rack stocked and full of good, sound, scriptural tracks. You got a friend, you got a neighbor, you got someone you're interested in, take one of those. Maybe what to expect when you visit the Church of Christ. It may be what must I do to be saved. It may be on some other issue. Take one of those and just give it to them. Say, I'm interested. How about reading this tract? We bought a little over 500 Searching for Truth DVDs. I don't know how many of them I've given out. I counted for a while, and I know several of you have done so. Those are excellent ways that you can hand one to someone and say, "What's this? If you got questions, call me. Let me talk to you about it." If you don't feel comfortable talking to them afterwards, call me. Call one of our elders. I can assure you, I can find plenty of people to teach if you'll be willing to invite. If you want a class to know more, ask for a class. The Don Griffiths, one of our elders who schedules our classes, I guarantee if you want a class to study how to reach the lost, he will provide it. And it may be as simple as inviting a person to worship. Some of you have done that and continue to do that. Inviting people to our Bible classes. We have great Bible classes. Vacation Bible School, the summer series, etc. Invite people. Make a list of those people that you want to reach. And then go out and do it. Number 7. Now, folks, this is one that's very important. We really don't believe God will hold us accountable. We really have somewhere in the back of our minds, and this is the reason why we're failing, is because we don't think that God will somehow look down at us and say, "That was one of the jobs that I gave you to do." There are some things in the Bible that are optional. There are other things that are obligations. Things that I have to do. Jesus said, "You must be born again," talking to Nicodemus. Not a matter of that option, but a matter of obligation. Jesus said in Luke 13:3, "I tell you no, except you repent, you shall all likewise perish." That's not an option, that's an obligation. Does God expect us as His church to go out and reach the lost? Listen to Paul, Romans 1:14. "I am a debtor both to the Greeks and to barbarians, both to the wise and to the unwise. So as much as in me, I am ready to preach the gospel to you who are in Rome also." It's a debt we owe. We owe it to our fellow man, to those 6.8 billion people. Mark 16, verse 15 and 16. "And he said to them, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He who believes and is baptized will be saved, but he who does not believe will be condemned." Those are our marching orders. Those are obligations given to us by the Lord. There is a lost and dying world that is growing, and it's our role and it's our responsibility to try to reach them for the Lord. And the text shows that, Brother W.C. read in the beginning, that we are to plead with men to be reconciled to Christ. As though God were entreating through us, be reconciled to God. There's a song, God has no hands but our hands. God has no feet but our feet. God is looking at us to do the job.